The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
If you are looking for life and career enhancements, you need experts that have been there, done that, tried, sometimes failed, and ultimately succeeded. Welcome to The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. You may be looking for help with relationships, health and wellness, home life, career, finance, or faith. We hopefully have the answers you are seeking. Now, here is your host, Scott Ventrella.
Welcome to the show, and I got a question for you. So what kind of image comes to mind when I use the term peeping Tom? Peeping Tom. It doesn't feel real good, does it? You know, no one likes the idea of somebody kind of, you know, peeking in through their windows or being watched without their knowledge. It just doesn't leave us with those warm and fuzzy feelings. So not too long ago, I travel out to California quite a bit, and I was in Santa Monica taking a walk along the beach, and it was just about dusk, so it wasn't a nighttime sky, but I'm walking up, and I look up. This is right in the center of Santa Monica. I look up, and there was this little, I don't even know what to call it. It was something kind of hovering in the sky, and it had colored flashing lights. And it wasn't moving around that much. It was more or less just, like I said, hovering. It almost looked like if you've ever been in a conference room and you see those speaker gadgets with the three or four legs. So it was about that size as well. No, it was not a UFO. Okay, I'm not going in that direction. Definitely creepy. Obviously, it was a drone. And I think actually most people were oblivious because I'm staring up into the sky and then I'm looking around seeing if is anybody else noticing this? And oh, by the way, what the heck is it doing? Who's it watching? And who's operating this thing? I had no idea. But it kind of left me with an uncomfortable feeling. I drive into New York City an awful lot. I live about an hour from New York. And, you get into the city and pull up to a traffic light, and pretty much at every intersection you look up and there are going to be cameras all over the place. Every building you walk into, and I'm not talking about the obvious like the Empire State Building, Freedom Tower, that kind of thing. I'm talking about pretty much any building, any restaurant, not just the banks as it used to be. You've got these cameras. Like everybody seems to be watching on the elevators. You look up, you see that little bit of, you see that little bubble. I don't know. So the question is, are we finally, have we arrived to what Eric Arthur Blair, Eric Arthur Blair, of course. Okay, I'm being a wise guy. Eric Arthur Blair, actually George Orwell. George, that was his pen name, George Orwell. But have we finally arrived to what is referred to as the Orwellian moment. Orwellian, of course, it's a great term. It connotes an attitude and a policy of control by propaganda, surveillance, misinformation, denial of truth, and manipulation of the past. And again, if you haven't read the book, it's fiction. 1984, Orwell described the totalitarian government that controlled thought by controlling language, making certain ideas literally unthinkable. Several phrases from 1984 have entered the popular language, such as newspeak, which is a simplified and obfuscatory language. I didn't say that word probably that great, but you kind of get what I mean. Designed to make independent thought impossible. Doublethink means holding two contradictory beliefs simultaneously. The thought police are those suppress who suppress all dissenting opinion. And then, you know, my favorite, and I think the one that most everybody can relate to or have heard or we've even used, is Big Brother, okay, a supreme dictator who watches over everyone. Now, here's the interesting thing. I think the interesting thing is we generally will, when we think of, you know, being watched, spied on, it's we think of the government or maybe even law enforcement. We're going to get into that with our guests in just a minute. But it's not just now the average Joe or Jane can do this. Yes, you too can, you know, spy on your neighbor. You too can, you know, be a peeping Tom without having to creep up to the window and kind of, you know, peep through the crack in the curtain. So I've got this little article here from The Atlantic by Rebecca Rosen. It's entitled, So This Is How It Begins. Guy Refuses to Stop Drone Spying on Seattle Woman. So I'm just going to read a little excerpt here, and this is a quote. It says, "This afternoon, a stranger set an aerial drone into flight over my yard." This is, of course, the eyewitness account. "And beside my house near Miller Playfield. I initially mistook its noisy buzzing for a weed whacker on this warm spring day. After several minutes, I looked out my third story window to see a drone hovering just a few feet away." Can you imagine that? I'm editorializing here, of course. Back to the quote. "My husband went to talk to the man on the sidewalk," so he's not on their lawn, "outside our home, who was operating the drone with a remote control, to ask him not to fly his drone near our home. The man insisted that it is legal for him to fly an aerial drone over our yard and adjacent to our windows. He noted that the drone has a camera which transmits images he viewed through a set of glasses. He purported to be doing research." I wonder what kind of research that was. "We are extremely concerned, as he could very easily be a criminal who plans to break into our house or a peeping Tom." Now, what's interesting here is that if you fly a helicopter over somebody's house or walk onto somebody's lawn and you're trespassing, fly over it in a helicopter, you're in the clear. It's the like a public highway. The air is a public highway. And that's what the Supreme Court declared in 1946. But then the question is, what about the in-between space? And also, you know, 1946, who could have anticipated the, you know, the technology, the ability for somebody, a neighbor, from actually, you know, maybe some distance away to be able to fly a drone, you know, over your property and do whatever, you know, maybe record conversations, record images. And I think that, so what it leads me to think is, obviously, you know, there's, when it comes to privacy, there is a, I think there are some really good reasons why I think, for instance, we'll get into this a little bit later, but the whole NSA, you know, and the U.S. government sponsored surveillance, you know, watching, you know, listening in on phone calls, and law enforcement agents that can do that now, FBI and other law enforcement agencies that use certain technology. And I think there's that, you know, yes, we want our safety, and we also want our privacy. So here to help us out with this, I think it's an interesting conversation. I know a lot of people have their own points of view, as I do, but I'd rather hear from our guest, Francie Kaler. Francie is a licensed private investigator, a former two-term president of both the National Council of Investigation and Security Services and the California Association of Licensed Investigators. Francie also works with the Innocence Project and holds certifications as a conflict mediator, legal investigator, professional investigator, and criminal defense investigator. And by the way, Francie also hosts PIs Declassified on Voice America Variety. Francie, welcome to the show. You heard that long introduction, but I'm sure, I don't know, so dive in. Come on right in.
Dive in. Right in.
Well, that's right.
Thanks for having me on the show, Scott. This is such an interesting subject. And, you know, we've all seen the movies, I guess, the Bourne Legacy, you might remember, that had the Predator. Actually, drones has become the word we use for them, but they're actually technically called unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs. So they had the Predator UAV in the Bourne Legacy. And then recently, yes, just this you know, last few months, we had 24 Live Another Day, where the UAVs were utilized by terrorists to override the control from military installations.
Hey, I watched that. I'm a big Jack Bauer fan, by the way. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, so that's the, you know, it's interesting. I read an article about how they're, you know, they're trying to come. So they're UAVs now, because you know, everybody, when we think of drone, we think of I think it became most widely known in military use. You know, you fly over unmanned pilot, and you're going to you know, lob a missile into you know, enemy territory. But you're saying now, so we've got a new term.
We got a new term, exactly. Yeah. And the definition would be aircraft that is controlled by pilots from the ground, or actually increasingly autonomous. I can't even say that. Following a pre-programmed
anonymously
mission, whatever that word is.
Gotta say it slow. Yeah.
Following some kind of a pre-programmed mission.
Right.
So, and they fall into two categories. They fall into the area of reconnaissance and surveillance, which is what you're talking about, and of course the military application, missiles and bombs. And there's actually evidently one that's been developed by the United Kingdom has broken the record for flying over 82 hours nonstop.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But so I think they're here to stay. I don't think we can deny that. And just a little history about UAVs or drones. They actually started in 1959. Which was, I didn't know until I started looking into this a little bit further. You might remember Francis Gary Powers.
Oh, of course.
He had his secret U-2 mission that was shot over down over the Soviet Union in 1960. That was actually a UAV. And it was launched under a code name of Red Wagon. And then it was used in the Tonkin Gulf War. It was used in North Vietnam. So it's been used since 1959, but the real use started after 9/11.
Okay, and so again, mostly for, you know, all those examples that you gave are military purposes, and I'm assuming with Gary Powers. Well, I guess I assume that was also military. I'm not sure how much, you know, NASA might have been involved in that.
Right.
But now, you know, now we move into, and this isn't just about drones, you know, the broader topic is about, you know, privacy versus safety.
Exactly.
You know, have we gone too far? But drones certainly, it is, and I'm using that term again, I think most people can, you know, kind of relate to it. It's shorthand, or UAVs as you have described them. But they're, you know, it was just a short time ago where they're mostly, you know, commercial use. And then I read a story in the local paper about a year ago, maybe just under, where a local hobby shop is, you know, they can't keep up with the demand.
Mm-hmm.
And they're selling these things for about $300. Now there's I read another story about a Chinese firm. You're probably familiar with, I'm sorry, the name escapes me. But now they're cranking these things out for for private use. And they're about $1,500. Which is actually, you know, fairly affordable for, you know, for many people. Now, the uses, that's another thing. You know, why are people racing to, you know, to purchase, you know, these now available drones?
Well, actually, and it's a very good point, and yes, and we need to be concerned about it. But before we get into that, let's just talk about how they're classified. So UAVs typically fall into six functional categories. Besides the military, obviously, one is the target and decoy, where they provide ground support that stimulates an enemy aircraft or missile. Then we have the reconnaissance, which is also a battlefield kind of a application. The combat, which is providing attack capability. Logistics. Now, that's interesting because that's designed for cargo and logistics operation. And then there's the research and development category to develop further UAVs. And then there's the civil and commercial. So the civil and commercial is a really small piece of those six categories. But there's a lot of applications, if you think about it. And I'm concerned, Scott, as you are, about the privacy aspects. I don't want some drone thing flying around my window either, controlled by some guy that probably doesn't know what he's doing or has nefarious purposes.
Well, I understand, there are realtors here in my town that they'll use it as a way to show, prospective buyers a property, get you into areas that you can do that almost on virtually on Google, but you're going to get sharper, clearer pictures. Although you're a private investigator, I understand that, private investigators are using them. But I think what bothers me is... it's like the peeping Tom. It's one thing. In the introduction, I said, when you're driving into the city, you look up, there are cameras all over the place. In fact, I think it's almost as if we expect it. But what's troubling to me is when, this woman, she hears this whirring like a weed whacker. Imagine wherever you're sitting right now,
right.
And whoever
right.
you are, somebody is watching you without your knowledge because I'm not the expert here. Perhaps you can give some insight here. And or they are, through using a drone, can actually record conversations through the walls. This was a concern of Justice Sotomayor just recently. Mm-hmm. Anyway, your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, people. And I'm not a surveillance operative, actually. That's not the kind of work I do as a private investigator. But I know a lot of people that do surveillance. And there's rules about surveillance. For example, you cannot take a photograph or a video through somebody's window, at least in California. I don't know about the rest of the country. But at least in California, where I reside and where I work on legislation on behalf of private investigators, you cannot... get close enough where you're actually recording through somebody's window. You cannot record family activities in somebody's backyard. So I would think, personally, that these same kinds of things would apply to the use of a UAV or a drone. There are privacy family matters that shouldn't be public, period. So there is going to have to be some kind of regulation to control that. Now, whether it's controlling the airspace above it, they've already created air freeways, for example, uh-huh. air streets. So maybe in certain communities, the air streets right directly above the houses are not available to UAVs. Uh-huh. Now, the problem with that is that you do have legitimate law enforcement activities that might apply to this. Like, for instance, I just heard yesterday or the day before that there was a big marijuana farm that was identified through the use of a drone. So whether you agree with that or disagree with that, that is a legitimate law enforcement purpose. There's, if you think about border patrol missions, for example, or search and rescue missions,
mm-hmm.
or maybe... detection of illegal hunting or forest fire detection. There's all kinds of good applications that you can think of that now these are all kind of law enforcement government based, but
right.
But there's good applications in it. From a private investigator standpoint, what if you have a missing child? Now, we work on those kind of cases.
Mm-hmm.
What if you have a parental abduction? We can work on those kind of cases.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to safety of someone, then it seems like a legitimate use.
It's interesting. I've got some interesting stats that I'll share when we come back from the break based on some Pew research on Americans and how they feel about some of this versus... other countries. It's fascinating data, and I wonder, before we go off to the break, those folks listening in, where do you think Americans stand? Do the majority, support the use of the certain surveillance, for safety, as Francie was mentioning, or do most say, no, that's really unacceptable. So we'll come back and we'll dive more into this. Right now we're speaking with Francie Kaler. We're talking about this whole issue of privacy versus safety, the use of drones and surveillance techniques, and what's your view on this? Certainly would love to hear that as well. Time to go to a break, and we'll be right back right after these messages.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. This problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from The Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
We all love our best friend, especially when that best friend is a canine best friend. Now there's a show just for the dogs, or the people who love them. Tune in to Dogs Rock Radio with host Pamela Hill. With your stories and advice from the experts, we'll show just how much love and purpose dogs bring to our lives and others around us. You'll also learn about canine fitness, training, and health and wellness. Make Dogs Rock Radio a weekly stop every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. To reach the show today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to scott@thebusinessofliving.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the program. We're here with Francie Kaler, and we're talking about this whole idea of, it comes down to, being watched and for what purposes, what are the motivations. I'm an adjunct professor. I teach at a couple of different universities, one in New York City, Fordham University at the business school, and also Fairfield University, the undergraduate level in Fairfield, Connecticut. And just actually this past week, I had a student come up to me. Now, I have in my classroom, I actually have a policy, no one can have any laptops open or on. Any smartphones, I make them hold them up. I say, okay, pretend like you're on an airplane, find the off switch and turn those babies off. However, I do kind of assume that at any time somebody could be, sending messages, email, texting, that kind of thing. So anyway, a few weeks ago, I was reviewing the midterm exam, and actually I was reading the questions, and it was multiple choice. So I read the question and then the different choices, but I didn't give the answers. I wanted them to hear what kinds of questions they can expect on the midterm exam. So now fast forward. This past Tuesday night, a student comes, everybody leaves the class, the end of class. One student comes walking back in, his head's down. He said, "Professor, this has been bothering me. I think you should know that the night that you were reading those multiple choice questions, I have, on good information that you were being recorded." Mm. And I just stopped and I thought, oh, isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Whether they were doing that to help them with the exam that was coming up, or what many students will do, knowing this is a class, it's a business ethics class of all things,
right,
which I thought was really ironic, is what they'll do is they'll record it and then they'll sell it to the next, because I teach it every semester. And the more I thought about it, I thought, well, I can have some fun with this. I'll change up the questions and really, you know. But he asked me, you know, if it really bothered me. I said, well, it bothers me that people would do this, especially in a business ethics class. Mm-hmm. But overall, I assume that, you know, yeah, big brother or sister is watching. So, Francie, again, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate that.
Well, this is an interesting topic, and it's very timely. And I think I agree with you that it is the Orwellian era.
Yeah, you know, it's like we. So I want to get your feelings on this, because I'm a little bit mixed. I shared before the break. I said there was a very recent Pew study that was done, and Pew Research, very reputable firm, and the question was, you know, how do Americans view the monitoring of its citizens? So, I don't want to put Francie on the spot.
Well, yeah, no.
I'll put you on the spot. Okay. So what do you think? Do you think people think it's acceptable or unacceptable?
No, I think they're outraged.
Yeah, okay.
I think they're outraged. I think first of all, I think there's a misunderstanding of what all the uses are, like we were just talking about.
Ah, there you go. Okay.
You know, so, I think there is a misunderstanding. Yeah. But I think basically when they hear it, they're outraged, because their vision is somebody like the woman in Seattle where the drone was flying by her window.
So I believe this had more to do with government surveillance. So let me read the stats here. Actually, 49% think that it's okay, that American monitoring of citizens is okay. And this is, think more anti-terror, even the NSA surveillance. And this is one study that I'm citing. And 47% say, no, it's unacceptable. Now, what's interesting, and I didn't count, but I've got it, I actually got it here, right, you know, pretty much in front of me. There were about 75 or so countries where this poll was taken. The U.S. was only about one of five where the majority thought that it was actually okay, that it's acceptable. And I just thought that was interesting. Now, you mentioned the woman in Seattle. I think most people would find unacceptable. I don't have the data on that. This was not based on private use.
Right. I think, you know, I don't know. It does seem like that drones should be used for military applications. That makes sense to me. I mean, it seems like it saves lives, and I'm talking about U.S. soldier lives, when you can have somebody in, say, in North Carolina or Virginia operating a drone that's dropping something in Afghanistan, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That saves lives. That we don't have boots on the ground there fighting hand to hand, getting killed, et cetera, because it can be controlled by some guy in the United States that goes home and has dinner with his family at night. So that kind of thing makes sense to me.
Now, how about this is the old slippery slope, Francie. Now, how about you got an O.J. Simpson situation? He's driving down the highway. Yep. You know, they're kind of trailing him. Hey, send in a drone. You know, take the gun. Well, I shouldn't say that, but you get it. It's one thing on a military battlefield, but mm-hmm. is it far-fetched to think L.A., New York City, you know, Miami, you know, pick your Chicago, pick your spot, and now you got, you know, the bad guys, and they're, you know, why put, because they use robots anyway, you know, to go in whether, you know, it's bomb sniffing or to kind of check out where they might be. But hey, the drones are so precise. You know, why not just now we've got drones that can not only assist the law enforcement, but actually maybe even you know, replicate it in some respects.
Well, I guess I have to ask you, Scott, why is that much different than possessing a bomb?
Mm-hmm.
That you could utilize, you know, like, look what Ted Kaczynski did. Yeah, that was illegal, but he made bombs.
Right.
And he had them delivered to people through the U.S. mail.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't control everything. We can't control the world. the best we can do is enact legislation that the honest people follow.
Right. Yeah. Now is that FAA mostly under, you know, we're talking about drones, and I want to talk about other surveillance techniques, but drones, UAVs. But so, for example, I'm just holding up yesterday's newspaper, the Wall Street Journal. Drone sightings near JFK show new risks. There's an article here. In this article, a drone came within 5 to 10 feet of the left wing of a Delta Airlines flight on Sunday evening. I know people have probably heard of this by now. Now, of course, the concern is that gets sucked into one of the engines. Depending on the size, I don't think a small one would take it down. But that was, you know, there are some issues there. And the FAA, I think, is still, you know, trying to kind of get their heads wrapped around this.
Well, yeah, no kidding. They have to control the airspace. I mean, the space around an airport has to be controlled, just like the legislation that's been enacted on lasers. Remember about the whole thing about lasers?
Right. Yeah, sure.
And that were affecting aircraft, affecting the pilots. So they have to do something to enact regulations that control that. But, you know, that only protects us to a degree. Mm. I mean, we can't ever let our guard down. Most of this application, we've lost our freedoms essentially through the U.S. Patriot Act. We've lost many of our freedoms, and some of those freedoms apply to what we're talking about right now.
Mm. Do you think, like, for instance, when it was revealed that the NSA was listening in on our phone conversations? First of all, my first thought was, if you get the bad guys, I'm cool with that, because I don't think the NSA really cares about, you know, who's not talking to who this coming Thanksgiving, and, you know, their plans, and what kind of turkey you're going to make.
Yeah.
And do people really care about that? I don't know. Now, in today's paper, there's an article that on Tuesday night, the Senate voted down, and this is, I'm quoting from an opinion article here, a dangerous surveillance bill interrupting the anti-terror campaign until a new Congress convenes next year. So there was some legislation drafted by Vermont Democrat Pat Leahy to impose new constraints on the NSA intelligence gathering, but it failed to reach the 60-vote threshold. Now, Senator Ted Cruz, who's actually, he was one of the few Republicans who voted in favor of this anti-terror campaign, and I'm quoting here, many months ago, the American people were astonished to learn that the federal government was collecting bulk metadata from personal cell phones of millions of law-abiding citizens.
Yeah.
Mr. Cruz said in a floor speech, and by crippling the NSA's authority to collect and analyze metadata records, he said, Mr. Leahy's bill protects the constitutional rights of privacy under the Fourth Amendment. Your thoughts on that?
Whoa, it's a big subject. I don't know. You used a good word a while ago, a slippery slope.
Yeah.
We're on a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, let me bring it more into your domain in the sense that, again, as a private investigator, I'm learning more about cell phone data spying. And I read a great article, and I don't have it here in front of me, but you're much more up to speed on this stuff than I am. But it was really fascinating where law enforcement can now, you know, pinpoint, you know, a perp by collecting cell phone data from a number of people, you know, good and bad, let's say, quote, and then really narrow it down to potentially, you know, a very specific location of where a perp might be.
That's been utilized for a number of years now. They track cell phone sites. They can track if you're driving from one point A to point B, they can tell where you've driven to. They can tell the location, the general location, not maybe specific, but the general location of where you are when a murder's committed. Mm. If you're the intended target of possibly an investigation. So that's been going on. Oh gosh, at least 10 years, if not more.
Okay.
It's just that people don't hear about it.
Right. Or, and you know, I don't, every now and then I'll be thinking, you know, I'll be, let's say, when I'm out in California, I love to go hiking, and I'm thinking, if I have my cell phone with me, I'm thinking, you know what? It's kind of strange thinking that, you know, people probably know exactly where I am right now, you know, right down to this 2 foot patch I'm standing on. It's just kind of a strange kind of a feeling. Now, earlier, I think you mentioned that, you know, as a private investigator, you know, how far, you know, would you go legally, to, you know, to capture information, you know, and what are your personal views on that?
Well, of course, I would go as far as the law would allow me, for starters. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, if I'm doing surveillance, I'm not going to photograph inside somebody's window.
Right.
But I don't do that, so it doesn't really matter. But I would, you know, if it was concerning a missing child, for example,
mm-hmm.
I think you have to go as far as you need to go.
Within the law.
Within the law. I mean, because private, you know, I mean, this sounds like a law enforcement deal, but often private investigators get involved in missing persons cases. I mean, and it doesn't even have to be a missing child. It could be a missing adult. If there's evidence of foul play and you have the ability to track somebody, for instance, if they'd have had drones when Ted Kaczynski was arrested, maybe it wouldn't have taken so long because they found him in a cabin way, way up in the woods that was completely isolated. So had there been drones then? I don't know.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but I look at the calendar and JFK was assassinated on November 22nd. Today is November 22nd. And I was actually, as I was preparing for the show, I was actually thinking, you know, I've been down in that Dallas, you know, where the assassination site, I've walked through the book depository. It's really incredible just, you know, being there after seeing it on TV. And I've been there many, many times. But I was thinking as I was preparing for this show, wow, you know, what if we had surveillance, not just drones, but drones, what if we were tapping? Because, you know, Oswald was suspected of having communist sympathies, had gone back and forth to Russia. You know, what if we, you know, I think if it was today, probably be a good chance that, you know, that assassination might not have happened. I don't know. We could play all kinds of, have all kinds of interesting discussions around that.
Actually, you bring up a really interesting point, because if you thought about a presidential motorcade, if it had had a couple of three drones flying above it and ahead of it and behind it.
Right.
There wouldn't be the questions there are today about John F. Kennedy's assassination.
Right.
Yeah. So back to your question about the NSA, like probably most Americans are concerned about the NSA monitoring our calls. And as long as it's done for good, we don't need to be concerned. But when does that change and who's in power that turns it into evil?
Right.
That's what we're concerned about.
Yeah, isn't it like that, Francie, with about anything? In other words, you know, when you think about, you know, technology and people rail on about, look, you can take anything like a hammer. It can be used for a good purpose. It can be used for, you know, to knock somebody over the head kind of a thing. So I think that, I think we can get pretty carried away with this. And I do believe that, you know, privacy should be respected. It is, you know, we're protected under the Constitution. I think as we both from different angles, but yeah, I think, you know, has the Orwellian moment, you know, arrived? Well, I think in some many ways, you know, as I understand that, it seems like it has. What I want to do when we get back, I want you folks please to be thinking about this. Anybody with children, or if you're younger and you're driving and you're still living at home, how do you feel about, you know, now that we have this GPS tracking devices, you can just kind of stick it on the car, whatever. I don't have one, but love to get your thoughts on that. And Francie, you also mentioned that, when it's a missing person case, I think when it comes to a child especially, you know, people, you know, much more, I shouldn't say much more, it's always a concern, but especially when it involves a child, you know, should we be, and is it okay to be keeping a closer eye on our loved ones, again, all with the intention of, you know, just ensuring their safety. So we'll come back to that. We'll be right back, right after these messages.
Yes. stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
All around the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus, creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson, in The Sea Around Us, said,
"All at last, return to the sea, to Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end."
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth.
Tune in Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
What if there was a radio show that could demonstrate how we can cut your taxes in half without diminishing needed government services? One that could explain how to create tens of millions of jobs at no cost to taxpayers, as well as fantastic yet easily affordable health care. Side effects include cutting crime rates nationwide, providing better education for our children, international peace and harmony, and protecting your private personal data from government intrusion. Tune in to Libertarians Working for You with Arvind Vora, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. To reach the show today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to Scott at thebusinessofliving.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. And hey, you know, who's watching who? Are you keeping an eye out on, you know, the people that you love the most? Like I said, that, you know, we want to ensure that that our children are safe. We want to ensure that, you know, people are playing by the rules. I actually, every now and then, I'll use a car service to get to the airport, because God forbid, trying to get to Kennedy Airport from Connecticut, you really do take your life into your own hands. I'd rather, you know, put that in the hands of someone who does it regularly. But I remember one time I had a driver that was just, you know, really tearing it up in terms of speed, you know, excess of 80 miles an hour, stopping, you know, swerving in and out, and I was really, you know, shook up. And I called the limo company, the car service, afterwards, and I said, "Hey, you know, you need to know about this guy, because I was afraid for myself, but also the other passengers." And they said, "Don't worry, you know, we can monitor that, so we will check and we'll know exactly, you know, where he was, what he was doing, how hard he was braking, accelerating, the movement of the car swerving in and out." So they were able to corroborate my, you know, my eyewitness account. I thought, and again, you know, I'm fairly well plugged in, Francie, but I didn't know that kind of technology existed. Now I find that, I shouldn't say now, but I was aware of this maybe a little bit earlier than this other technology where, hey, you got teenage drivers like I do. Well, yeah, you can actually put a monitoring device to find out, you know, they say, "Well, you know, I'm going to the movies."
Right.
"I'm going to the library to study." Oh, okay. So what parents are doing now is they can verify that. They can know exactly where you are. Oh, so you were at the library, right? So I think, first of all, I want to be clear on my position. You know, we've always, with our kids, we've always been of the mindset, and we tell them this, that, you know, we will trust you until such time you give us reason, you know, that you can't be trusted. And sure. And this may seem very naive today, and I am in no way passing judgment on people who do monitor, you know, in this case, teenage drivers are, you know, going and where they're not going. But, you know, that's not something we would do. However, we have friends that have no qualms whatsoever. So, you know, Francie, what do you think about that? I'm sure you've run into, and is that something legally that you can do as a private investigator? Can you track somebody's car?
You know, private investigators typically don't have any more rights than anybody else. Just let me just lay that out there. Okay. This is a state by state thing. In California, it has to be the owner of the vehicles, the registered owner of the vehicle. Okay, so
if the car was in my child's name, I couldn't do that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, probably not. Mm. Probably not. Now, my recommendation is anytime you think about doing something like this, to contact an attorney, really, because there's so many little ins and outs about it, and it does vary state by state, and sometimes it is a difference between the and or, you know, like how you have registration could be Mr. Mrs. So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so and Mrs. So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so. Uh-huh. So it could be that little technicality. So I would suggest getting advice of an attorney. But basically, if you are the registered owner of the car, you have the right to do with that car what you please. And that includes putting a GPS tracking unit.
I'm waiting for a teenager to sue their parent for monitoring their activity, their whereabouts. Yeah,
yeah, like, probably wouldn't fly if they're a minor.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so essentially that's it. You have to be at least in California. I don't know how it is where you live in Connecticut, but it'd be interesting to know.
I know many people, again, that do, monitor the whereabouts of their children. And many, teenagers, they get snagged. It's like, you know, gotcha. I think they can be monitored also just if their mobile phone or smartphone is on, you know, right. They can certainly be tracked that way. But I, again, we've kind of broadly talking about this whole idea of privacy and safety and law enforcement. I think of the, you know, Ray Rice, the football player who beat up his girlfriend in that elevator. You know, had there not been a video on that, you know, that would have just kind of, that would, you know, I know they eventually got married and all of that, and he went back to playing football, but, you know, that would have just gone away, and then no one would have known anything about it. But
it would have.
Now we've got that kind of footage. I don't know. So I still have mixed feelings. I don't like the idea of, even now as I have my computer, my laptop up on my desk here, and there's that little camera, somebody tells me that, you know, I was at an airport one time, and they said, "Hey, Scott, do you realize, 'cause I'm not a high-tech guy," they said, "somebody sitting across from you can actually be recording you, videoing you through your own laptop." Now, I don't know anything about that, Francie, but does the technology exist to do that?
You know, I believe it does. I don't know anything about it either. I'm not a tech person, but right. I have heard that's true, and I have heard you have to be very careful, for instance, in Starbucks when you have the Wi-Fi there or at the airport with the free access Wi-Fi.
Security. Yeah. Exactly. I'll read my newspaper.
So. But you know, you mentioned the cab driver. So, a business who owns the vehicles has the right to put a GPS unit on their vehicle. I think there was not long ago, UPS ran into that where they had monitored one of their employees through a GPS tracking unit and found that they were doing something maybe that wasn't quite above the board.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an area that is absolutely legal. They own the vehicle. UPS owns their trucks, or, you know, if it's a county or city or government vehicle, they absolutely have the right to track those. Any business that owns their delivery trucks, all of that.
So I'm thinking of the U.S. Postal Service. So all these, the old, the mailman, where you're really on your route.
Right.
So they can actually, now, do they, as a matter of fact, you may not know this, but do they actually, you know, place those, whatever the equipment is, that, you know, do they equip the trucks with those, all the trucks? Do they do that, or only if they suspect you of doing something?
No, it depends on the company. It depends on the vehicles. Sometimes they are built into it, and sometimes they are attached.
Okay. Yeah. It seems like more and more they're, it's almost becoming like standard equipment, you know, as a fleet service, you know, you know, we'll install them, because I think the price point's getting to the point where they can, you know, it's somewhat more affordable.
Well, it's kind of no different than that OnStar program.
Yeah, that's
right. The
rescue
program, it's the same thing.
The only difference there is, again, you sign up for it. You've got full knowledge. Now, that's another thing. Do they have to tell you? Like I said, the technology is changing so quickly. I was shocked when somebody said, hey, you know, somebody could be taking a picture of you right now or actually stealing data off of your laptop. So a company-owned vehicle, do they have to tell you?
I believe they do. I think it has to be a notice. Now, whether that's buried in small print into your hiring papers, I don't know that. But I would believe that they have to notify you.
Well, that's, you know, this goes back now more than 5 years ago, but not more than 10. So I'm maybe 6-7 years ago. So I don't know if the law has changed much, but I do speak to my undergrads and even graduate students about this, because I don't think they understand that, just like with a company vehicle, that if you're at work and you're using company equipment, if you're using the company internet, then and sending emails, I always tell people and my students and clients, I say, you know, always keep things separate. Don't mix the personal with the professional, because what's happened when I was the executive vice president of a publicly held company, somebody brought some information to me about one of the employees that suggested they were doing something, you know, illegal and or unethical. And so, you know, we consulted our attorney, and we had at the time the right to go in to review the emails. And indeed, you know, something, you know, nefarious was going on. The person was terminated, and we, you know, obviously confiscated all the equipment. But I don't think a lot of – now there, I don't know if – at least at the time, I don't believe we were obligated to have to tell our employees that, you know, we could monitor phone calls using, if they use company, again, equipment, computer activity and the like. Websites, obviously a lot of companies, major companies, you know, can monitor exactly where you're going, what sites. Many are restricted, but they, you know, people have been, again, zinged, like, okay, you know, you went to that that XXX site, you know, and we know that, and you can't do that, kind of a thing. As an executive in an organization, you know, we would occasionally... Now, we, you know, obviously, just like with the NSA, we didn't care what people were doing for the most part. But if we had some kind of suspicion, yeah, we would go in. If we had to be a fairly, you know, plausible or credible, you know, suspicion or accusation for us to do that, you know, it wasn't like we cared much about, you know, we weren't trying to pry into the private lives of our employees. But as an executive of a publicly held company, I also have a responsibility and an obligation to make sure that, you know, people are playing by the rules and that they're following the code of ethics as, you know, outlined in our manual.
Exactly. And if you're the owner of the equipment, the owner of the truck, the owner of whatever it is, you do have that right. Now, I probably should say more that it seems morally right to me to advise employees that could happen. But
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, whether companies actually are doing that across the board, I don't know.
Yeah. No, and I think, I agree. I think it's always better to be transparent. And a few weeks ago, we actually had a conversation about, you know, is it ever right to snoop on your kids or an employee? And again, my view really aligns with what you just said, that even with kids, you know, if you're gonna monitor their activity, let them know.
Yeah,
they may find ways around that, but when it just seems kind of sneaky, and you know, you go back to the old ethics standard. You know, how do I feel about, you know, kind of doing this without the knowledge of my spouse or my kid or my employees? No, I agree with you there. I think
Well, you know, trust goes both ways.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk. We got a couple minutes to go. Legislation. You keep up on all of this. What's the latest?
Okay, on GPS specifically, there are three bills pending. One is the GPS Act that it applies to government agencies where they have to get a probable cause warrant to get geolocation information. Okay, so So there's that one. And that was initiated by Senators Ron Wyden and Mark Kirk and Congressman Jason Tavitz. So that is pending. It was actually introduced March 21st, 2013, but as we know with government federal legislation, it gets carried over from year to year until it either dies or gets passed. And then there's the Online Communication Geolocation Protection Act, and that was by the California Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren and Texas Congressman Ted Poe, Washington Congressman Susan Delbini. And that was actually referred to House Judiciary Intelligence, and that simply is many of the same provisions of the GPS Act, and then it has some safeguards for online communication. So it's essentially the same with a little bit added.
So, Francie, I think, you know, the good news is I think there's an earnest attempt to try to stay up on all of this. I really appreciate you joining the show. Thank you so much. You added a lot to the conversation, and you've been able to fill in all my ignorant spots on this subject. I really do appreciate it. Listen, folks, be sure to join us next week. Just in time for the holidays, we're going to have special guest Vanessa Loader. Now, Vanessa is going to help us de-stress, find some balance, gain perspective. I know it's a tall order. I want to see if she can really pull this off, but just in time for the holidays. And we'll catch you again next week. You take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Living. Please join Scott Ventrella for another edition of the show next Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you here next Saturday.